Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for some 30 years in two languages all over the world. Here in the U.S., interviewed four U.S. presidents, worked at four or five different U.S. major television networks. Don't like what they do, by the way. And you know why? I think news should be honest and direct and impactful. And this is Direct Impact. You know, as an American, I have to start this newscast by saying what most who live in this country and are intellectually curious must be thinking about now. The world must be laughing at us. I mean, can you imagine? We call ourselves the world's beacon of democracy, and our election is somehow over before it even begins. Let me show you the final results, for example. Let's look at New Hampshire, shall we? And let's start with President Biden, who decided, or his party apparatchiks decided, not to campaign in New Hampshire. That means the President of the United States chose to ignore the voters of New Hampshire, which is kind of weird, right? But let's look at the numbers here. He still won, by the way, even though he wasn't really even in the race. People had to write his name in. He won by 42,000 votes against a congressman named Dean Phillips, who no one has ever heard of. He also beat the unknown write-in candidate who came in third. Who's that candidate? Nobody really knows, but we do know this.
Donald Trump. 4 more years. This is going to go on for a while. They got this plan.
Like those protesters you just heard in Virginia, some chose to protest Mr. Biden at the ballot box in New Hampshire as well. 1,500 people voted, or actually wrote in their ballot, the words, "Ceasefire now." Thousands more likely would have voted for ceasefire now if only the media would have covered it, but it seems like they weren't allowed to. I wonder why. By the way, along those lines of trying to protest against the slaughter of tens of thousands of Palestinians that Mr. Biden is at least partly responsible for, there's also this. Here's the president recently being heckled by Palestinian supporters while he was speaking at a South Carolina church. By the way, South Carolina will be the next primary.
Without the truth, there's no light. Without light, there's no path from this darkness. That's all right.
It's important to note that Democratic Party officials are banking on African-American voters as Mr. Biden's salvation because he was, after all, President Obama's running mate, and they remain loyal to him. That's understandable. But while that's true of older African-Americans, it's not so much the case with younger Americans, including even African-Americans. Those voters tend to be turning against the president specifically because of his foreign policy, and most of all because of what they call his support for the killing of 25,000 Palestinian civilians in Gaza. But let's go back now to the Biden speech in South Carolina. It's a historic black church. Important moment. Strange thing happened there. When the African-American congregation, who are descendants of the most oppressed people in the world at one time, seemed to not give a hoot about the oppression of Palestinians, when they did this. This chant that you're hearing, 4 more years, that's the response from a people once so horribly oppressed to calls for less oppression of Palestinians. Seems curious, doesn't it? But not so fast, says Mark Lamont Hill, the popular African-American commentator and scholar who watched the Biden church speech at the historic black church. He comes out and he blasts both the president and the congregation that celebrated him.
So I was a bit struck last week when I saw that they opened the pulpit up to Genocide Joe. Y'all can get mad, I don't care. And people, as he began to give his campaign speech, some protesters stood up and said, "Stop the blood in Palestine." They said, if you're outraged by the blood of Selma and you're outraged by the blood that was spilled in this very church, then how about calling for a ceasefire in Palestine since you've given them the weapons, you've given them the support, you've given them the money? Joe, why don't you do something about it? They marched and stood up and got kicked out of the church, and people said, we're outraged. You know, I was outraged too. How dare you use this sacred space? How dare you use this beloved pulpit? How dare you use this sacred tradition? How dare you use the words of Jesus, who overturned the tables in the temple, who was committed to overturning a Roman government, who was committed to speaking out against injustice? Yeah. How dare you use this space as a shield for imperial war?
So that's the Biden story, destined to be, by the way, the Democratic candidate. On the other side, there's Donald Trump. Mr. Trump, embattled by a bevy of criminal and civil court cases, also won New Hampshire by beating his opponent by 11 or so points, and is expected to win in the next primary in South Carolina by an even bigger margin, even though she was the governor of South Carolina. That means he, too, has all but sewn up the nomination. Incidentally, like President Biden, Mr. Trump's remaining Republican opponent is just as hawkish as Joe Biden. To Nikki Haley, all Afghan government officials are terrorists. 20 years of fighting there wasn't enough. She wanted to continue. She also believes the world doesn't need a health organization. She seems to despise Russia and says, quote, Putin just wants to take away everyone's freedom. She hates that President Trump met with, quote, our enemies, calls China dangerous. But of course, when it comes to Israel, 100% on board.
What we need to understand is that Ukraine has the ability to win, but we have to think bigger than that. And for them to sit there and say that this is a territorial dispute, that's just not the case. To say that we should stay neutral, it is in the best interest of America. It's in the best interest of our national security for Ukraine to win. We have to see this through. We have to finish it.
Haley will undoubtedly get trounced by Mr. Trump. But there's one more thing you should know about her. She is the most well-funded among all Republican candidates, and the vast majority of her donors and super PAC money represents the very things that she espouses. Never-ending wars, American hegemony, and an astounding blindness toward any and all of our present or past misdeeds. Now let's talk about the two elephants in the room. And there they are. The former and present presidents of the United States, Mrs. Biden and Trump. Fact is, for a country which, according to most polls, doesn't want to see a rematch between these two guys, it sure seems like that's exactly what they're going to be getting. Both Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden are the oldest serving presidents in the country's history. One is 77, the other 81, respectively. They're also the least popular presidential candidates in the country by a long shot. And yet somehow they're considered shoo-ins for the November presidential election. How does that make any sense? It may have to do with the onslaught of criticism being hurled by each other and their parties at the other guy. Both are said to be too old, both are said to be too out of touch, and neither one of them can walk or talk. And the videos of both of them, seemingly exemplifying that, are everywhere.
Despite these obstacles, Karen, we must seek real bipartisan solutions. Our army manned the airport. It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports and the combat infantry bin.
Hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be spent, get ready, to make sure Americans see those videos. And more over the next several months. But still, both men are destined to win their party's nomination. So what does that say? What does that say about the U.S. when polls consistently find that Americans don't want a rematch but are going to get a rematch anyway? Is it because Americans secretly want the very thing that they most dislike? Or is it because American democracy, or more to the point, our method for choosing our leaders is no longer an example of real democracy? So when we come back, I'm going to be joined by Jamaal Thomas and Angie Wong, who have some very distinct and, dare I say, even different opinions about America's presidential election. Stay right there. We're going to be coming right back. Joining me now to talk about this is commentator Jamaal Thomas and journalist Angie Wong. Let's get to it. I don't know what to say. Jamaal, maybe I start with you. Other than the fact that this doesn't seem to be the same country that I grew up in.
Yeah.
We've got two guys running for president. One of them spends most of his time in court because he's got criminal cases and civil cases up the wazoo. And the other guy isn't even showing up to debates and is canceling primaries. And his party's already decided, oh, yeah, he's going to be the guy. Something bizarre here. No?
No, agreed. The primary thing for New Hampshire, let me start with that. Astonishing. Joe Biden got embarrassed in the last primary that he ran in.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Sanders, all these guys, Joe Biden, in fact, they didn't even think Biden was going to be able to carry the burden. He came in like fourth or fifth in New Hampshire. So the Democratic Party says, you know, we're going to move the primaries. So instead of having Iowa and New Hampshire first, we're going to go to South Carolina, because South Carolina is where Joe Biden got his legs in regards to the last.
Because he's getting, because he wants black people to vote for him, not white people.
Yes, but it's almost.
What do you mean yes? That's exactly what's going
on. No. I don't disagree with you.
I mean, I'm saying, Iowa is like 90%. White, and South Carolina is where Democrats go to win.
But see, I think it's more about the conservative aspect of the Democratic Party, this kind of third-way thought. A conservative Democrat is going to win South Carolina. If you had thought about it, for example, Obama, if he didn't take Iowa first, maybe Obama wouldn't have been Obama. If Bernie Sanders, again, in New Hampshire, again, being able to kind of this new energy candidate.
But look, forget all that, because people are watching us all over the world and they don't even know where the hell South Carolina is, right?
Fair enough.
The fact of the matter is, all over the world, people have always thought America was the beacon of what we call democracy.
Right.
You'd have 10, 20 people fight it out and their ideas hopefully would win. Is that what we're seeing in this case? We see two guys who eventually, that's it. It's going to be between these two guys, the former president and the present president. And by the way, both of them are wearing diapers, it seems like. I mean, that's what America is looking at. I mean, Angie, I'm sorry, to you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You have the parties choosing for us, you know, the servants here, who they can decide to win. It's not even a choice. You saw the DNC boot out everybody. They didn't even entertain the idea of a Dean Phillips or even an RFK Jr.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He had to go find another party to run on. And with Donald Trump, he's reinventing the Republican Party. He's saying, I don't need you, Ronna McDaniels. I don't need you, RNC. I'm going to do this on my own. And he did. He created a movement, and now he is the front runner. And, you know, if he's living and breathing come November, he's going to win that ticket.
What do you think of the fact that there was really only one legitimate opponent for Donald Trump? And she is, in terms of my research so far that I've been able to come up with, completely bought and owned by donors and super PACs. What's wrong? Isn't there something wrong with that picture? Nobody could come out of nowhere and just say, no, I disagree with this man. And by the way, she didn't disagree with him. What do you make of Nikki Haley?
Yeah, well, obviously, she's been a slow burn. I was there when she announced her run for presidency, and she's been, you know, just trickling up in the numbers ever so often. But, you know, she was really smart enough to knock out her other opponents. Now, we know this. You need at least $1 billion to run a presidential race these days.
Stop. Yeah. I want the world to listen to what you just said. If you're listening to us in Delhi right now, if you're in Europe, if you're in Moscow, if you are in parts of Latin America, I want you to hear what Angie just said, because this is what we've become. Say that last thing one more time.
in order to run for U.S. president and for the office of the presidency, you need at least $1 billion U.S. dollars. You know why? You got to pay off all those consultants. You got to pay off all the media. You got to do all that stuff. And that is the reality of things. That's where the super PAC money comes from. And because, you know what?
Well, I'm going to stop again. And maybe, Jamal, I'll bring this to you, or maybe I'll bring it back to Angie. Let's ask this question. I want people in the world to know how this works. Jamal, where does that $1 billion come from? Does it come from Ma and Pa? Does it come from a guy who owns a gas station in Hialeah, Florida? Does it come from you and from Angie and from me? Who does it come from, by the way?
$10 may come from me. The other one is coming from corporations in regard to super PACs. Then you got other rich people, like in Hollywood, where Joe Biden gets $10, $15 billion when he goes to Hollywood.
So that $1 billion decides who our president's going to be, and it's not in any way connected to the people who are living in the United States.
No. That Princeton study that came out, what is that, like 1% influence in regards to the political parties, in regards to what they do,
yeah,
in regards to policy? Well, yeah and no. I mean, it's in line with the people who are paying them. I mean,
so the party picks the candidates.
Yes.
The donors decide among those who they're going to back. The money buys the commercial, which feeds the media. And then the people get to vote on those two at the end.
Right.
Whether it's Hillary Clinton and this guy or that guy or Joe Biden or whatever. Does that sound... Because we go all over the world telling everybody how we're the greatest democracy in the history of the world. I mean, when you watch an American election, you're getting a real democracy. That's really but being chosen by the people. Is it?
That's called propaganda, Rick. I'm just telling you what it is,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, I want to be honest about this. It seems like there was a time when there was money. There's always been money. There'll right. always be money. But it just seems like now, between the party apparatchiks and the money, where's this heading, Angie?
Where is this heading? Well, I think the balloon's been popped. I think the American people are now starting to understand that there is, there might be elections, but then there's also the alternative narrative running, which is, you know, there are mechanisms in place to win the election. And it happens in the early stages, the Iowa caucuses, the New Hampshire primaries, and then the trifecta of bringing on South Carolina. Those, you know, there's a reason why Joe Biden only wanted to start in South Carolina. He wanted to bypass New Hampshire because South Carolina can be bought. There's walking around money all over the place. We've seen it. It's the James Clyburn machine down there. Whereas New Hampshire, there's a lot of independents and there's a lot of Democrats, but there's also open primaries. And that's how Nikki Haley was able to pull up into the high numbers that she did. I mean, she closed at 40-something percent. What? She spent $38 million there to get 40-something percent.
I think that if you get enough money, you can buy enough commercials. And if you can get enough commercials, you can make any story about anybody. You can turn Mr. Magoo into Superman and Superman into Mr. Magoo. And unfortunately, that's kind of what we've gotten to now.
Yeah.
But aside from that, let me say that Mr. Biden has, in fact, heard himself with his extremely hawkish positions.
Yes.
Because I think young Democrats, young African Americans, as we saw in the case of Mark
Lamont.
Mark Lamont Hill, yeah. We're seeing that young Americans, young ethnic Americans, African Americans, Hispanic Americans are coming out and saying, hey, Grandpa, we're not for this. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you're not doing anything for us. And I think that could actually have an effect on Biden when it comes to the general.
Well, it does. I mean, look, from an African-American perspective, you look at what has taken place, let's say in Israel, for example, you identify with the Palestinian yeah. cause. I mean, this country went through a vicious, complicated history. And so we see that
and
take issue with that.
African-Americans in America were occupied.
Yes. I mean, yes, in real terms.
They weren't occupied.
My girlfriend wanted to watch.
Just like the Palestinians are
exactly.
in Israel.
And
it didn't start
it.
On October 7th.
No, it did not start right. on October 7th. People can see it. They identify with them. They see what Biden is doing with this one.
Biden doesn't see that.
I think he sees that Biden is in a box on this issue. I mean, the reality of it is the U.S. position on Israel has always been this kind of ally thing, the only ally in many respects.
Do you think, and here's one to you, Wendy, because I think you tend to favor Trump, right?
I do.
Yeah.
I am a Trump girl.
Okay, that's fine. The interesting thing about Trump is his foreign policy is harder to nail down than most of our presidents. I mean, Obama was a bit of a hawk. Not as bad as Hillary Clinton, not as bad as Joe Biden, but he was a bit of a hawk. Trump is a hawk when it comes to Israel because he got $125 million from a casino owner in Las Vegas. But for the most part, his foreign policy was a little more tough to nail down. And I like that.
Absolutely. Well, look, he is he's a bully around the world like he is in the U.S. You saw the way he dealt with President Xi of China. You saw the way he dealt with North Korea's leader. I mean, he went over to the DMC and shook his hand. People are scared of him. You know, a lot of the world problems that we see currently with Putin and with Zelensky and then the fighting in the Middle East, all of that.
So you sound like a super hawk. Wait. So we need to go around the world beating people up and telling them what to do and what to say and how to think. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that a lot of the shenanigans that we're seeing today would not have happened under the Trump administration.
But your argument is flawed. But wait, your argument is very flawed. Nobody is tougher on the world than the administration of Joe Biden. His people go all over the place. They say Russia. They say horrible things about China, horrible things about Russia. We got military exercises in the Black Sea, military exercises off the coast of Taiwan. That's as hawkish as you can get. You're telling me Biden is too weak?
Well, Biden does not have a really clear policy anywhere. Look what he's doing in the Middle East. He's sending Anthony Blinken there. He can't even go over there himself because it's an election year, right? Uh-huh. And he now sees how divided the U.S. is on the issue of Palestine versus Israel. And he can't win because he can't say the right thing. And even look at the Red Sea incidents that's happened over this last week. He's asked President Xi of China to handle what's going on with the Red Sea and cargo ships being blown up. He can't do it himself. He's delegating.
The fact of the matter is, at this point in the United States, it's hard to figure out what we can do. But when it comes to foreign policy, I think we're losing our prestige. And it's not because we're too weak. No. I think when Republicans say that, they're really building a straw man argument.
Nobody's scared of Donald Trump. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Look, I agree with you in a foreign policy standpoint. I mean, the reality of it is Donald Trump was willing to make peace when the opportunity presented.
But do you agree with my point? I like Donald Trump's foreign policy more than I like Joe Biden's foreign policy.
Agreed.
I'm not saying I like Donald Trump. I say his foreign policy seemed to be at least, he tends to give a chance or creates an argument. When he once said what we did in Iraq was stupid.
Yeah.
Most presidents won't say that.
But they agree with
the media.
But we agree with
that.
It. But we agree with it as Americans. When Trump comes out and says Obama got 500,000 people killed in Syria, he was right. And Trump, if you remember, tried to
pull those people out of Syria. Is he saying that because he believes it and understands it, or is he saying it because he knows it'll be a popular thing to say? Just like he says he hates Mexicans.
It can be a little bit of both. I mean, the reality of it is Donald Trump did try to pull the troops out of Syria. Donald Trump, he murdered Soleimani, but he pulled back in regards to going to war with Iran, something that some of the other presidents might have done. I mean, look, he has been open to peace overtures in a way that the Biden administration hasn't.
I agree. And I think, Angie, I'll give you the last word. You would probably agree as well. I mean, it's a mixed bag with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But at least you know he's not going in guns a-blazing to go around telling the world that they have to do exactly what we say and starting wars.
Well, at least you know with Donald Trump that world leaders do respect him because he'll pull trade tomorrow. Look what he did with Macron, and he just, remember we were pouring champagne and French fries down the tube because he didn't get what he wanted with Macron. So you're going to see a little bit of that. Yeah, it's a little bullying, but honestly, world leaders, they respect him. They don't love his tactics. The style's not great, but he gets it done, and he's getting it done for the American people, which is really what he's there for.
Yeah.
Right? So he doesn't have to have all these, he doesn't need friends everywhere. He just wants to make sure that the American people are taken care of, that we're not getting screwed over by our foreign players.
You know, it's interesting, different perspectives, but, I couldn't disagree with you more. I think Joe Biden is the bully. I think Hillary Clinton was a bully when it comes to her treatment of other countries. If you were not a U.S. ally, to her, you stunk. And to Joe Biden, it's that way now. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I think we can accuse Trump less of that than we could the other two. But that's why we have these conversations.
Yeah.
And that's why it's fascinating to have these conversations. Angie, you've been a delight. Thanks so much for joining us and sharing your perspective with us. Jamal, always good to have you around as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you both. And before we go, I want to remind you of our mission here. Simple, really. We kind of want to, like, de-silo the world. We got to stop living in these little boxes. Truths don't live in boxes. They're everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.